Welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm talking this morning with Professor Will Parsonage, who is a senior staff cardiologist, or the senior staff cardiologist, at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital. And he's also the clinical director of the Australian Centre for Health Service Innovation at the Queensland University of Technology. Hello, Will. Thank you for your time this morning.
Morning, Kate. Thanks for inviting me.
You've co-authored some great research that's going in the MJA shortly on accelerated diagnostic protocols in emergency departments for chest pain. Why does that research need to be done?
Well, chest pain is a big challenge. It's one of the most common reasons that people present to hospital emergency departments. I listened to one of the podcasts you presented earlier this year about warning signs of a heart attack.
Yes.
As most people know, in this country, we've taken the approach that people who have chest pain should present to hospital emergency departments, that that's the correct place for them to be assessed. And that's mainly because the most important serious cause of chest pain are acute coronary syndromes, heart attacks. Yep. That's a very treatment for heart attack is very time dependent. People will be familiar with the sorts of treatments that are required in terms of thrombolytic therapy or reperfusion through percutaneous intervention. And so we do really want people with any sort of warning signs to present to hospital emergency departments very promptly. But we do know that the majority of people that do come to hospital turn out not to be having a heart attack. That's a good thing. But it presents a big challenge for the hospital emergency department. So our group, led by Louise Cullen and myself, for several years now have been working in this area and trying to face up to that challenge through research and then implementation of our research finding.
So when a person presents at an ED with chest pain, what's the current method of triage?
For some time now, and in many jurisdictions around the world, there's sort of variations, but variations on a theme. And there was a big shift sort of 15 to 20 years ago to a process of risk stratification when people present. It was always recognised that making a precise diagnosis can be very difficult. In some patients, it can be very easy to see that they're having a heart attack when they come in. They give a typical history of symptoms, mm-hmm. And they have obvious findings on the ECG, which can be done very quickly within 5 or 10 minutes of presenting to hospital, or increasingly ECGs are now done pre-hospital, and we try and make the diagnosis pre-hospital where that's possible. But in a substantial number of patients, the diagnosis isn't so clear when people present. They may present with more subtle symptoms. The ECG may be unhelpful, or they may present with frankly atypical symptoms that, you know, suggest an uncertain cause or even something else. And so we've used a process of risk stratification to try and assess how likely it is that patients are to be having an acute coronary syndrome, and then a process of serial tests over a period of time, typically using ECGs and biomarkers like troponin to identify patients who are in fact having an acute coronary event.
So what is an accelerated diagnostic protocol, and which one did you choose to do for this research?
Well, if we go back to the clinical guidelines that were prevailing in this country, published in 2006, then at that stage, we were encouraged to, as I say, risk stratify patients as low, intermediate or high risk of having an acute coronary event, mm-hmm. and then performing serial testing using ECGs and blood tests over a 6 to 8 hour period. And in other guidelines, it was even longer than that. So our research centered around performing risk stratification using similar criteria, but trying to identify patients quicker. So using ECG and blood testing when patients present, and then just 2 hours later. And that was the big change for us, was when we published something called the ADAPT study in 2012, which showed that we were able to very accurately identify patients who were at low risk or rule out an acute coronary syndrome with a very high degree of accuracy by using this testing over only 2 hours rather than the more sort of traditional 6 to 8 hour approach.
I mean, that sounds like it needs a fairly substantial cultural change within the emergency department.
Yeah, I think it was a cultural change. I think in some ways what we did with that study and then what we've done subsequently with implementing that was fortuitous in terms of its timing, because whilst it required a cultural change, there were a lot of incentives at that time. I mean, we mentioned earlier that the overall burden of the number of people presenting with chest pain is a substantial challenge for health service delivery, and in particular in the emergency department where we think these patients should be. There is, of course, other pressures as well. We know that, you know, the rates of presentation to our hospital emergency departments have been increasing by, you know, a significant amount year on year for some time now. And so although a cultural change was required, there was a lot of incentive to do that. At around the same time as we were producing data in this area, there were other political imperatives such as emergency access targets and so on. So, and I think there was a general feeling in hospital emergency departments that this was an area that where we did need to look at new evidence and better ways of practicing and better ways of approaching the problem.
Tell us about the design of this current study.
Sure. Well, I mentioned the ADAPT study. I mean, that was a collaborative study that we performed together with colleagues in Christchurch in New Zealand. And that was really the evidence base for what we've subsequently done in terms of implementing that accelerated diagnostic protocol across really most of Queensland. And that's the paper that's published in the MJA. When the ADAPT study was published in 2012, we were struck by how well that was received, really, not just nationally, but internationally. I remember attending meetings in Europe where the ADAPT paper was being presented in keynote presentations about chest pain assessment very soon after its publication. I remember being quite surprised about that. We've done a little sort of Australia and New Zealand study that certainly Europe and the United States wouldn't be taking much notice of. But in fact, it had a lot of impact, and perhaps because it was a substantial change to current practice. And we decided that if that was the case and that the evidence was being seen as strong and valuable, then we should take a serious look at implementing that into practice, you know, pretty much straight away, rather than waiting longer for the more traditional process of just dissemination of results through the community. So we were supported by, to give them credit, the Queensland Health at the time,
yes,
to start implementing the accelerated protocol in hospitals in Queensland. And we started with a pilot at Nambour Hospital, which we published a few years ago, and then moved on to what became known as the statewide ACRE project, which is where we started implementing the accelerated diagnostic protocol in all of the target public hospitals across Queensland, which was really all of those hospitals that were seeing patients with acute chest pain and had access to 24-hour pathology testing that was required. Pretty much all of the tertiary hospitals. It's actually all of the larger regional hospitals and then all of the tertiary regional hospitals and then almost all of the metro hospitals. There's really only one large metro hospital that didn't take it on. And then what we've presented in this paper is that not trying to prove again the clinical effectiveness, because we felt, and obviously the clinicians involved also felt, that the original study had proven this to be a safe and effective approach, but looking at what impact this had on health service delivery.
And what did you find?
Well, we found really impressive results. I mean, I think they exceeded our expectations in many ways. We realised that a process that was able to assess patients as being at low risk and to do that safely and to do that in a shorter period of time would help to facilitate discharge from hospital emergency departments, perhaps more readily than had previously been possible, but also to do that more quickly. And so we looked at those two outcomes as the endpoints of this analysis before and after implementation. And we actually found that in all of the 16 hospitals that are described in the publication, we saw a reduction in the admission rates for patients with possible cardiac chest pain. And we saw a reduction, and that led to a significant reduction in the hospital length of stay in nearly all of those hospitals as well. And in fact, all of the hospitals saw either a reduction in length of stay or a reduction in hospital admission. And there was also a modest but significant reduction in the length of stay when you just looked at the length of stay in the hospital emergency department, which was another important metric.
Does it translate into a financial saving as well?
We think it does. I mean, it's actually quite difficult. We have published some work on this, but it's actually quite difficult to quantify precisely the cost of how much it costs to assess a patient with chest pain. But we've made some estimates of that from our cohort some years ago. And if you translate the reduction in the hospital admissions and the reduction in the hospital length of stay, we think that over the 12 months of the implementation, then this should have released around $11 million worth of health service capacity based upon those estimates. I mean, you have to say, though, that that should be an ongoing release in capacity because, as far as we could see, that these results, certainly after 12 months, appeared to be very sustainable. So we would think that release in capacity would continue to be accrued. And given that the intervention is pretty simple, we weren't using any new expensive technology here. In fact, we were just really using the same clinical methods and the same tests that would be used beforehand. So it's really only the cost of implementing the ADP that should be offset against those gains. We prefer to talk about released capacity because I think in emergency departments, that's really the most important metric, really, rather than dollar saving.
For the full results of this paper, you can, of course, access it online at www.mja.com.au. It's open access research, so you don't have to be a subscriber to read it. It's open for everyone. So what's next? What needs to happen next to make this happen as a general practice across the country?
Well, I think that all hospitals should be, you know, working with a structured process to assess patients with chest pain. That was there was a rewrite of the national guidelines last year, which incorporated some of the information from the studies we've performed. I mean, there are certainly other ways of assessing patients with chest pain, and I think it's actually the implementation of those that's more important than actually the particular rule that you use, as long as it's something that's clinically valid and safe and effective, of course. And I think it's important that people look at those guidelines and follow on from them and actually make sure that in the institutions they work in, or the health services that they work for are using that or something comparable. Because this is, as I said at the beginning, it's a big challenge to the health service generally.
Yes.
This accounts for 5 to 10% of emergency presentations. So it's a big problem and it's a big challenge for everybody. We all agree that the right thing to do for anybody with, you know, warning signs is to dial 000 and get to hospital.
Yeah.
We think that's the best way of assessing patients and leads to the best outcomes. But in order to support that, we need processes behind that are able to, you know, assess people safely, identify those that are at high risk and provide the care that they need, but also identify those, you know, the majority who are at low risk of a problem, who can, you know, be discharged from hospital and reassured very confidently, but also in a quick and efficient manner. So I think those two things sit together very well. I guess the only other thing is, you know, the sustainability aspect of it. I mean, I think that's whenever, you know, if people are interested in this sort of implementation, the question always arises, well, you know, what happens when you leave? Doesn't everybody just go back to doing what they were doing beforehand? But, you know, some of the results in the paper do address that. And as far as we could see, I mean, and I did mention this, but the outcomes, both in terms of the hospital length of stay and number of people being admitted, seem to be being sustained out towards the sort of 12 months of the post-implementation. One of the advantages of the fact that we were able to show that there was a reduction in hospital admission, but also a reduction in emergency length of stay and hospital length of stay, means that there was sort of something to be gained here for all different parts of the health service, both yes. the emergency department teams who are sort of struggling under the weight of numbers, and but also the inpatient services who obviously, you know, have a limited resource in terms of the beds and so on.
Yeah.
And so there was something to be gained here for all parts of the service. Right. And also the patients, and we don't have a lot of information in the paper about patient reported outcomes. But you know, obviously most people want to spend as little time in an emergency department as possible.
Yes.
As long as when they're told that they can go home and that they're safe, that in fact, you know, they are safe, and that's what this has been able to do, really.
Terrific.
And I suppose the other thing is that, you know, this leads, I mean, as you've obviously realised, this leads very nicely into the other paper.
Yes.
Which I guess is, you know, is the next step, which is, you know, we still think that after we'd done this implementation that there were still further refinements to be made. We still think we probably over investigate. Thanks for your interest.
No worries. Thank you for your time.